Hello and welcome to the first Follow Yourself Experiment podcast with me, your host Rose Savage, and our first ever guest, Holly Bendel.
Trade your freedom for stability. It was like, yeah, wow. That's exactly what I had done the last year.
Hello and welcome to the Follow Yourself Experiment, the podcast where we dive into what it really means to carve your own path and live life on your terms. I'm Rose Savage and I'm absolutely thrilled to be kicking off our very first episode with someone who truly embodies the spirit of the show. Today's guest is Holly Bendel, a multi-talented force of nature. She's a snowboarder, BMX rider, surfer and professional stunt double. She's modelled for brands like Rafa, John Lewis Plus Apple and Finisterre. And she's an incredible sculptor. Her piece, Waiting for Fish, aka Dave and Bird, proudly stands on Portlevern Harbour, unveiled by Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall in 2022. Holly is sponsored by Ford UK and Zeron Surfcraft, and she signed with modelling agents W Management. But more than all of that, she's a grounded, creative and inspiring human being. She's everything this podcast is about, fearless, authentic and unafraid to follow her own direction. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Holly Bendel.
Oh, thank you so much, Rose. It's so lovely to have you here in my studio.
It's amazing to be in your incredible studio in Zena. I mean, the energy in this space is incredible. The story of how you found your studio is epic. Can you share that with us?
I can, yeah. So I think I've always known I love to have a studio in Zena. And I guess if you speak to anybody, they'll always tell you it's impossible. So I guess... as soon as somebody says that, I just kind of like, I know that it's something I'm just going to have to do anyway. I've walked this coast path quite a lot and I've looked on Google Maps, and I guess there's like an area that I love in like West Penwith. And for the last few years, I've been finding different buildings that could be potential and going quite far down a track. And I'll go as far as I possibly can until it is really absolutely not possible, and then I'll move on. And then with this one, I found it about a year ago on Google Satellite, and I looked it up on the land registry to see who owns it, and it was owned by the National Trust. And so I approached my friend Nick, who works at the National Trust, and he runs this incredible surf competition called the Single Fin Shootout, and it's, yeah, that's in Newquay, and it's super fun. So I asked him, and I said, you know, this derelict barn, would it ever be able to be an artist studio? And he said, oh, well, actually, at the National Trust, we are looking at like doing things with our abandoned buildings at the moment, so it's quite good timing. So he put me onto somebody, and yeah, it's basically a year's conversation about a barn that was actually going to be a holiday let. And they very kindly at National Trust saw how much I was really keen to have this space and make some new work for the local community, and yeah, they very kindly have rendered it to me.
And it's amazing. It is the most incredible space, and it is right at the end of a path, just like you say. I mean, it's the most amazing story, and it totally sums up the spirit of this podcast. You didn't just go to an estate agent and find a place. You had a very clear vision and trusted that it existed. Would it be fair to say that your decision making comes from a strong sense of what is and isn't right for you?
Yeah, I definitely get feelings from things. I remember when I first found this place on Google Satellite and I came to have a look, and I just had this feeling, and I just knew that this is where I really wanted to be. And that definitely happens in other things that go like a completely different way. And you know, I've done jobs before for maybe like not even a full day, and I've just known that it's not been right, so I've just left. It's like I can quickly get a feeling for something, and I might have all these different ideas, but it's like actually go through with it and I'm there in person, or I'm trying something, then I don't really know. So I guess I just try lots of different things, and that's how I quickly find out what feels right and what doesn't.
That's amazing. And you're not, so it obviously doesn't worry you to try lots of different things. I mean, I remember we had a conversation not long ago and you were talking about that you moved into a flat, and actually after a week you were like, no, this just isn't right for me. And I know a lot of people would be thinking, me included, would be like, but I've got a contract and I've got to think about this and I've got to think about that. But you just have this very strong, like, no, it doesn't feel right for me.
Yeah.
And you're not afraid to try lots of different things.
No, yeah, definitely. And I've actually probably lived in a ridiculous amount of places, and yeah, it does come from this strong sense of, if something's not right, I have to change it. And I think unless I fully believe in something, or I fully love something, or I'm fully in something passionate, I'm just not interested.
That's incredible. I mean, that's such a powerful way to move through the world. Where do you think that strong sense of following your gut like that comes from? Is it a gut thing? Do you feel it in your gut?
Yeah, I would say it is a gut thing. I don't know, maybe it's like in my nature that like I've always just kind of followed my curiosity and things I'm excited about. And it's like if I do something that I'm not like fully in, like I'm so down and it's like soul destroying. And I can't live like that. And it just kind of like kills my spark. So I always just try and do things that just feel good and like have this good energy. And it just, yeah, I think maybe it comes from that.
Yeah, that's so interesting to hear, because I think so many of us kind of go through life and live in unhappiness in a way, when you talk about like, oh, I just can't bear it. And they think that they're stuck in that place. But actually, you kind of give yourself a freedom to experiment.
Yeah, I guess I'm always sort of searching for that like feeling of like, I want to feel alive, you know. And I think I just don't like feeling stagnant or stuck or trapped or, yeah, those sorts of feelings. And like it just kind of kills my creativity. So I just try and, yeah, live a life where I feel like joy and excitement and curiosity and, yeah.
Yeah, I love that though. You said I love feeling alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so talk a little bit more about that. What are the things, I mean, you also mentioned joy, curiosity.
Yeah.
Which again, I don't think we are curious enough sometimes as adults. Like that feeling of being alive, what makes you feel alive? What do you want? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, it can be from all sorts of things, like beautiful, like deep conversations with people, even strangers. I guess in a physical sense, it's always when I'm like in the water, especially if it's like a really stormy day and there's probably no one else in. It's just like this feeling of like being humbled in a way, like if the waves are big and, you know, you're being thrown around. It's just like that. Yeah, and maybe I do kind of put myself in some slightly different situations where, you know, it's a little bit dangerous to some people. But I think for me, it's always like a calculated risk. Like I kind of know my strengths and stuff.
Yeah.
So especially within the water, like I'm not an idiot, like I know what I'm capable in. But yeah, it's kind of just like pushing that boundary ever so slightly. Like riding my motorbike, you just feel super free and super alive. And then yeah, like the feelings of joy, like they always come from, actually sometimes when I'm just like in like not a great place and I'm just like maybe in my head a bit too much and I'll just be going about my day and I'll just notice like the smallest moment of like happiness or joy. And it could be just, you know, it's normally just from like observation. Like I'll be always watching like people in the street and maybe it's like how a couple have interacted, or, you know, like I don't know if I can think of them right now, but just, I don't know, yeah, maybe like a bird. Or like the other day I was like a bit down and I just like rode my motorbike from Zenith to Penzance to meet a friend, and it was super misty and I was just kind of like in my head, and then out of nowhere these two wild geese just like flew over my head and they just like did a full flyby, and I just felt so much joy, like so alive. And it reminded me of this Mary Oliver poem called Wild Geese, and that's probably the poem that like really changed my life. Like I just really connected to that poem, and it talks about how like you can feel super lonely, but like you're always connected to like nature.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's amazing. You seem, not when you talk, not only connected to nature, but very much to yourself. Like this sense of knowing what is going to work and what isn't going to work. And then also this sort of, you know, you talk about that sometimes things might seem dangerous to other people, but actually you know your own capabilities. Like this sort of very strong sense of self and what you're capable of and what is right for you. And yeah, would you say that's the case?
Yeah, I would say that's the case. And I think that probably actually just comes from spending a lot of time on my own. Like
yeah.
A lot of either my like sports that I do are quite solitary in a sense. Like I do surf quite a lot on my own, as much as it is nice to surf with friends. I really don't mind going on my own, or just spending time in the water or riding bikes. Like, you know, even like when I was younger, I'd just be off doing something, or like creative pursuits, their drawing and making, they can be quite, you just spend like a lot of time on your own.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's where it kind of comes from.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, and again, I think a lot of people find that quite hard to sit with themselves in that way, and sort of, yeah, it helps provide time for you to be really true to yourself, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. There are so many things that I admire about you, Holly, but one that really stands out is how the passions that you have shaped your life and even your career, and how they're like really rooted in play. I mean, snowboarding, BMX, skating, surfing, stunt work, it's epic. These are things that most people see as hobbies and childhood dreams, but you've carried that spirit into adulthood and built a life around it. So many of us forget how to play as we get older, but you've held on to it. Was that intentional?
That's a good question. I guess like those feelings that you get from doing these things of excitement, and I guess I'm just constantly just, yeah, following what I'm excited about. And I mean, it's not been like a super easy journey into figuring out, you know, like how to like survive, you know, make a living from doing these things. But I guess I just kind of figured it out in a way. You know, I guess I got into BMXing when it wasn't like a sport for girls at the time, and you know, there weren't any girls competitions, and you know, now it's in the Olympics, which is absolutely incredible, and it's funded by UK Sport, and it's like a real career path. But back then it wasn't, and I was lucky enough to get paid by some brands, and ended up going down the modeling route a bit, just really by accident, just because it paid well enough to give me time to then do things I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and I guess the modelling that you've done has been for a lot of it for those outdoor kind of active brands as well. So it's from having those, which is what I mean about it sort of even shaping your career. It's from having those hobbies, those, you know, well, what a lot of people would see as hobbies. And then, you've got a whole other career that's kind of come off the back of it as well. Like, kind of the poster girl for some of it as well.
Yeah, I mean,
amazing.
If you'd have told me that, you know, when I was younger, that one day I'd be on a photo shoot in Mexico and the day would consist of going on a boat trip to go surfing via some whales, and then coming back off the surf boat and then going riding a motorbike, and you're with like some of your really good friends and just you're being paid for that, I would have just made, well, there's probably a part of me that would have believed that, because I've always, you know, I'm a dreamer at heart really. But yeah, it's still incredible.
Yeah,
that these days happen.
Yeah, that's so interesting what you say about being a dreamer at heart. I heard somewhere, and I've no idea where I heard it, but I really loved it, is that if you don't dream, then things can't become a reality.
Yes.
So you kind of need to dream so that you move towards it in a way.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I'm huge on manifestation. Like,
right.
I journal every day and I'll have these ideas and I really manifest.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and there's such a power in it.
Yeah.
And it's not just like, oh, I wish, or, you know, in a year's time I want. And I guess there's different forms of manifestation, you know. It could be quite materialistic, but for me it's more about like, it's like sometimes it's just like how I want to feel, or like the people I want to be around, or like, for example, I just wanted like my own peaceful space where I could make work and feel safe, and that's what the studio has ended up being.
Yeah.
And then I think there's like the intention of like writing it down or speaking it out loud of what your manifestation is, but you have to do the work to get there, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be quite relentless and not give up in getting those things that you do manifest.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I never knew that you were a manifester. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So take me through, like, what is your... So you journal, obviously.
Yeah.
And is it all journal-based, or do you do other kinds of manifesting as well?
It's all really just, like, in my mind, and then, yeah, it will come out in my journaling, mostly.
Mm. And do you find, like, it hard to say out loud sometimes what you're thinking? I really want to do this, but I'm really nervous to tell other people that I want to do this. Or are you just like, no, this is what I'm working towards, I'm aiming for this?
Yeah, there's certain things, like with creative projects, for example, like I will kind of keep them back, because I don't want to like lose any of that energy towards them or like be too influenced. And yeah, a lot of things I probably will just like get on with in like quiet and not speak them out, but then I'm like super happy to share them like once they've happened. I think there's always a part of me that like, oh no, like what if I tell somebody and it doesn't work out and like I failed? But like, I'm fine with like failing with myself. It's more just like failing maybe with other people, I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. So failure is really interesting, because obviously, you know, we have to fail at things. I think Edison famously I've forgotten the number, but a ridiculous amount of attempts at making the light bulb.
Yeah.
And it's that resilience to failure that kind of gets you there in the end. So it's really interesting you mentioned that, and you also talk about trying lots of different things. And so when you sort of try something, what's the spirit that you go into that with? Is it like, oh, I'm just going to see if this is a little bit of fun and see how it works out, and if it doesn't work out, you just change direction? Or is it a bit more serious than that? What's the...
Yeah, I guess sometimes I'll just be curious about something and I'll go and explore it. Like yesterday, well, for a while I've been thinking about like making a new piece out of copper because I would love to make it myself. Whereas a lot of my work gets cast at the foundry in bronze, which is incredible, but I'm not part of that process so much.
Right.
And I've just been really wanting to like be independent and be able to just like have an idea and just start making it.
Yeah.
And it's like such a beautiful material. So yesterday I asked a friend like where you could buy it from, and he recommended going to see the copper house in Newlyn and speak to the guy there, and I called him up and he invited me down and had a quick chat, and he's invited me to come anytime to just play. And like, yeah. I feel like they're kind of, yeah, just, I don't know, you just, I don't know where that's going to lead. A lot of the time it's best if you kind of don't know where it's going to lead.
Yeah.
Like with Dave, for example, when I made that sculpture, I literally just was chatting to my mentor one day, and she's like, come on the sculpture course, because, you know, like I was like in a bit of a like lost place, and I always go and see her when I'm a bit lost. And she was like, just come on the course, just make one of your drawings, just like whichever one you feel like you want to make. And I just, as soon as she said that, I knew exactly what drawing I was going to make, but I had no idea where that drawing was going to go. And that's kind of, otherwise you can put too much pressure on yourself and too much expectation. And to be honest, like after I made Dave, and it really, it couldn't have really gone any better, you know? Like
yeah.
For me, like the amount of people he's touched and still does every day, like I still can't really believe it.
Yeah.
But then since then I've had this like paralysis of like, oh my gosh, where do I go from here? Like, what should I make? Like, what if it's not good enough? So you still do have all of that doubt, but now, like you say, I'm just like, I'm going back to playing.
Yeah.
And just like following different curiosities and just not necessarily knowing the outcome, but just as long as you're enjoying the like the process.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you can get so fixed on this like future goal. If you don't enjoy yourself getting there, then like, what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, it's so great to hear you talking about that. And it really makes me think about how closely play is tied to freedom and creativity. All of those words you've just kind of talked about in the last answer. And how often we lose touch with that because we're trying to be grown-ups or follow some kind of script. And actually, even as you were talking about Dave and how easily that came to you the first time and how well it went, when you're trying to work off the back of the success of that, it almost becomes like you're following a script, and then that becomes the blocker. So do you think that sense of freedom in the movement and creativity and even the way that you live and work in this beautiful studio is something you've always felt, or has it been something you've had to fight for? Or even still, as you talk a little bit, it sounds like there are points that you're just very aware of it and you're still fighting for it a little bit.
Yeah, I think I read this beautiful book, and in there it's like on Japanese philosophy, and there's a guy and he talks about how you really end up trading your stability for freedom, and the opposite can be true. You trade your freedom for stability.
Wow.
And that really struck with me actually, and it was around, I read it on Christmas, my mum bought it for me for Christmas, and I do this thing where I get a new book and I just open it up to a page, and it's always like a message. Like I feel like I'm quite spiritual and like I look for signs and things. And it was at a time where I was just wanting to quit my job, and, you know, like, just, like, not feeling like I was on my right path.
Mm.
And I opened to that page, and as soon as I read that, and it's like, oh, you trade your freedom for stability, it was like, yeah, wow. That's exactly what I had done in the last year. I was trying to have the stability of, like, a stable income or a stable place to live or, you know, whatever those things that you can define as stability. You do pay your freedom for those things, and ultimately I guess one of my values is like having freedom.
Mm.
You know, not just like freedom in a sense of where you live or what job you do or that sort of thing. It's just like how you kind of feel. Like you can have all of those things but you can still feel free.
Yeah I think that's so interesting. I actually talk to my children a lot about this and freedom, because there was a point in my life where I didn't feel free. I felt so incredibly trapped, and I didn't really know how to move forward, and my options felt incredibly limited. And it just made me think, I never want to feel like this again in my life. So, like, financial freedom is really important to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I talk to the girls about, as they're growing up and getting jobs and things, that actually, you know, my career as a designer has, I've been very lucky to work down here in Cornwall, but it's been very linked to London. And then that keeps you in one place. You can't travel around again. So I talk to them about, you know, when they think about getting jobs and things, get things that will enable them to move around the world, and actually they can build the life that they want. And yeah, it's exactly that. Having freedom is absolutely everything. It's the golden chalice.
Yes.
It's so hard to get.
It is hard. Yeah.
And I feel that we are all, you know, as we get older and we grow up, the kind of responsibilities bolt onto us. Whether we decide to have children or not, we're all part of families that we might feel responsible in some way, and often we buy houses, and you know, it's all those kind of things. That, like, one of my main criteria for buying a house will always be, is it rentable, so I can have freedom to move
amazing.
Away.
Yeah,
all of those kind of things. So yeah, that's really interesting. But I love that. Can you just say it again, actually, the bit that you read, that
yes, it's about how you trade your freedom for stability.
Yeah.
And you can also then trade your stability for freedom. And it's definitely not easy. And the part on the book, it talks about this very successful Japanese guy who had these businesses, and he lived in a city, and he lived the, you know, conventional life. But it was, he realised that, you know, he was trading his freedom for that stable life. And he moved to another part, like a more rural part. And he said he started again from net zero. And it really resonated with me, because so many times in my life, I have just gone back to net zero. You know, I've quit my job, I've left a relationship, I've just, all at the same time, I will just, like, completely shed my whole entire life and my belongings, or my house I've bought, or everything. And it's like, when I go in these, like, I guess, transformational kind of points in my life where I end up on a track, you know, and I might be subconsciously following certain societal pressures, or, you know, and then there's something in me that's like, no, this isn't right, or this isn't your path, or it doesn't feel right anymore. And yeah, and is it, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. I'm not gonna sit here and say, oh, it's so easy to live this life. Like, you know, I'll constantly, like, will question things and constantly check in with myself. But yeah, where was I going with that? I guess, yeah, that kind of, also that net zero. And he, the reason he did that is because he wanted to know if he could survive without a backbone that was like, that he was attached to this big corporate company. That was his backbone, and his, that was his challenge. And he did, and he set up some incredible new businesses in the place that he'd started. He wasn't doing nothing.
Yeah.
It was just, he wanted to do it on his own terms.
Yeah. I love that you talked about going back to net zero there as well, because again, through that time where I felt like I lost my freedom, I was forced to go back to net zero. And it terrified me. Like, you know, societal things tell you that that's not a place where you should be. Like, that is not a comfortable zone to be in.
Yeah.
And actually, like, from there is this power to build the life that you want.
Yes.
It's like, actually, you can start again. It's like, these things weren't servicing me.
Yeah.
And actually, what do I want my life to look like? You can reframe it and start it again. And I think that's a really, you've just, put it in the most eloquent way. It's an amazing thing to do. And I think a lot of people are quite scared of that place, but actually, you know, you could make it work for you. And like you say, with your manifesting and things like that, it's in those places, it's like that real reflection of what you want your life to be, right?
Yeah, and sometimes that does come from being in, like, a place where, you know, you're actually going through, like, a really tough time in life, and just things aren't really going well, or, like, not feeling good. And, you know, I've been through my fair share of hardships, and I think sometimes you have to get to that real point where you're like, okay, I cannot carry on like this, and that is kind of like the catalyst for, like, change. And then it's beautiful to get to that net zero point, because you do, then you have choices and you have options, and you can say, like, you can slowly introduce things into your life that feel good for you and are right and aligned.
Yeah, that is absolutely amazing. And you seem, you know, you said it there, you've had really tough times, like, it's not easy, the path that you've chosen, and it comes with its own challenges. And I think, like, to the surface and to someone looking in on your life, it can look like it's such a natural flow to kind of do that. But I guess holding your integrity to have the life that you truly want is hard work.
Yeah, it's funny. I do often get quite a lot of messages on Instagram saying that, like, I'm living the dream or I'm living my best life. And, you know, they're friends that I've, like, either gone to university with or, you know, I've known. But it's funny because there'll come at times when I'm really not living my best life and I'm actually really, like, struggling with something or, like, going through something. And I guess I mean, maybe threefold of my own, I do only ever really put out things on Instagram that are, like, really good. But that isn't my real life, you know. It's, like, it's parts of my life, yes, but I don't know. There's only probably, like, a few close friends and family that really know, like, my true journey in life. And I think that's what, like, really does make you. And I would love to be more open about it, but I don't know. There's something about sharing too much online. Like, I'm quite a private person. And it's fine if I'm in, like, a conversation with someone where I know that they're, like, listening and I'm in, like, a safe place. But just to, like, put those things out there. Like, also, I don't want to, like, people to feel sorry for me or, like, you know, because there's people who have been through far worse and, like, still are, like, to this day. So it's, and not to, like, diminish, like, you know, I think everyone's pain's relative, but yeah, it's just that it hasn't been a super easy journey.
Yeah.
But I think you do have, hopefully you do have a choice.
Yeah. And I think, like, having a choice, that's amazing, really. Yeah. You are choosing what you want it to be. And I think you talk there about that it is difficult at times, and how in those times when it gets just too noisy and busy, and, you know, how do you stay grounded? Because that always comes across in you, Holly, is that you are this really rooted, strong character, but in quite a quiet way, you know. I know you like your space, and you know you like to get away from it and things. So yeah, what do you do when life gets too busy?
Yeah, my first point of call normally is just to, like, go in the ocean. I think, like, just to, like, rinse myself and my mind. And also, like, I'm lucky, I've got, like, a really good support network, which I've needed, like, and I've built over the years as, like, my mentor, my parents, close friends. And that's, like, super important to just, like, be able to, like, have those safe spaces to talk about things. And then also just, like, I do have this, which I think everybody does but might have lost it, is, like, this connection to the natural world. And, like, just being in, like, especially living in Cornwall, it's, like, I think that's why we're all here, right? It's, like, the environment here. It's, like, the rugged cliffs, the, like, the ocean, like, the power, like, you know, watching the moon rise, like, the sun rises, the sunsets. Like, it's such a magical, like, when things get super heavy, I tend to just, like, zoom out and, like, and also look up, like, just and think of things on, like, a much bigger scale. It kind of takes you out of, like, your really small, like, fishbowl. And also, like, I have these kind of unexplainable spiritual encounters of animals, which I feel like always come at the right time, like, for example, that wild geese story. But I've had so many of those, like, when I was going through that phase, like, just before Christmas, I, like, kept having all these different frogs, like, appearing, and they're, like, such a sign of, like, growth and, like, positive, like, transformation. And I can't really explain it, but, like, that I think the signs probably are there for everybody, but you have to be open to them and, like, be present and be aware.
Yeah, you've got to be in tune with what they are. It's interesting that you say animals. I have dreams.
Do you?
So yeah, I have, particularly through growth, I have, like, a recurring dream of a house, which will be a house that I know. Sometimes I live in it, sometimes it's someone else's house.
Okay.
And then I'll be walking through it and there's loads of different rooms that just are new, but they've not been there before. Some are kind of built and finished and some are not, and I kind of navigate it. And I've done so, because it's a dream I have a lot, I've done so much research into this dream, and it apparently is exactly that. It's finding new, it's you discovering new parts of yourself and stuff. And then, like, the level of decoration and things has to do with how well you're kind of doing on that path and things. But yeah, it's interesting. So yours is animals. Mine would be dreams. So interesting. But yeah, you're right. I mean, living in Cornwall as well, like, so many of us here love nature, and it's sort of what draws us here, and I think we get a lot from it. But it's also, you talked about that, like, it's so big in comparison to us. It kind of helps put things in perspective a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's why I love snowboarding and going to the mountains, because there's no silence like there is in the mountains. And just, like, the scale of things, and you just feel so small.
Yeah.
It's just, like, there's something amazing in that.
Yeah, yeah. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, Holly, this has been such a rich conversation. Thank you for being so open and honest, from trusting your gut to honouring play to building a life that really feels like yours. I mean, you shared so much that speaks right to the heart of what this podcast is about. So it's so exciting to have had you here, like, for the first one, absolute perfect guest. But before we wrap up, is there anything you'd like to leave listeners with? Maybe a piece of advice for someone who's standing at that crossroads, trying to follow themselves?
Yeah, I probably would say two things. Like, one I've always followed, like, since I was quite young, is just life is what you make it. I really believe that. And secondly, if you're not sure like what you want it to be, just follow those little niggles of curiosity. And just be open and you'll just be surprised.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to fail. Yeah, I guess have a go, see where it leads.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much. Honestly, you've, as I say, you've set the tone for this podcast in the most perfect way, real, grounded and inspiring. It's been such a joy to be in this incredible space, to hear your story and kick things off with someone who truly walks their own path. Thanks again, Holly, and thank you for listening to the first episode of the Follow Yourself Experiment. If you enjoyed it, share it with someone who needs a little nudge to follow their own direction, and I'll see you next time.